Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
How Not to Suck at Divorce listeners, it's your captain speaking, and we've got some news for you.
Divorces are turbulent, and while we can't promise clear skies ahead, we can promise clear skies if you're concerned about an ex's alcohol use around your kids. Listen, I'm an attorney, and I recommend SoberLink. Why? Built-in facial recognition, tamper detection, real-time results, and court-admissible reporting. You can trust it.
I love that SoberLink is the only system designed to support both parents. Look, divorce does not have to suck so bad, and neither should co-parenting. Learn more and get $50 off your device by visiting www.soberlink.com/not suck.
Some people want to look poor. Some people want to look rich. Like, this is in their own mind.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Hey girl, hey, it's nice to see you again. It's been a while.
It has. And I don't know why, but I'm looking at myself because when we're recording, today is a Sunday morning. So I'm just looking at myself. I look horrendous right now. I'm like a cross between a crypt keeper, Medusa, and I don't even know what, but like, please don't use this footage of me right now because it's beyond.
This footage would not serve either one of us.
I can honestly totally agree with that point.
Like, after people see, like, you know, the beautiful images that we post, you know, when we're like prepared, and then this, people,
yeah, it's like a Halloween nightmare. That's what I look like.
I mean, especially me, it would be like, well, geez, no wonder she got divorced.
We're really sorry about that.
Best of luck, bitch. Like, when are you guys going to do an episode on self-care? And when are you going to listen to it?
Self-care. Jesus. For me, they'd be like, God, those roots do not look quite right.
Your roots aren't gray though. They're just dark.
Oh no,
are they gray?
Oh, in the last like year and a half, I keep looking at myself and I'm like, what is that? What? No, no. And sure enough, here we are.
Well, girl, I am almost 100% gray.
You are?
Naturally. Yeah, isn't that awful?
It's not good.
Add that to my list. Add that to the list of things that I'm over. Seriously.
So there's something I have to get off my chest because I'm just so over it.
Oh my God, me too. Okay, scale of 1 to 10, how over it are you?
11. How about you?
12.
Okay, well then I gotta hear this.
That's not my official over it though.
Okay.
My official over it, if you can't hear it,
is I am so tired of not feeling well. I got sick, as you know, because I've been complaining about it, and I got bronchitis, and I had to take steroids, and these steroids make me feel disgusting. Awful.
Like, are they making you feel jittery? Like, what exactly do you feel like?
I can't sleep. I take them in the morning, obviously, because I know you're not supposed to take them at night. So I take it in the morning, but I'm not able to sleep. I just don't feel like, I don't feel good. Like, I'm not hungry at all. Ooh. What's weird is I'm not losing any weight because you're on fucking steroids, right?
Yes.
So I'm not eating, but like, I just weighed myself this morning hoping that it would be like so low that I'd be worried about myself. Mm-hmm. No.
You're not. Mm-mm.
No.
No.
If it scale makes you- hasn't mm-hmm. budged.
Mm-hmm. If it makes you feel any better, you know, I just got back from Africa and it was awesome. Hello to all my African listeners. Loved Africa. But now I have like 35 more days of malaria pills to take. And they suck. They suck. I'm like, every day I'm like, all right, if I don't take these, am I going to lose a limb? Like, what's going to happen? I'm weighing the pros and the cons because I'm like over that.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing in my head that you just said hello to all of my African listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you know how many languages are in Africa? Something I learned a lot on that trip, but there's so many languages. I wouldn't even know where to begin and which language to say it. Like, one country has 42 languages. So it's just like beyond. So cool.
But do we have any African listeners?
I think we do. Do you
have? I mean, I know we have some, right? Because we're in every, I think we're in almost every country now, but I just can't, I'm just laughing at like this conversation. Hello to all my African listeners.
Mm-hmm. And if
they're like, oh, hey girl. Yeah. You got to finish those malaria pills.
You do that.
Oh my God. This cough, I'm dying. I feel disgusting, but let's talk about things that are making other people crazy, because there's a topic that it's so odd that we've never covered this because it's a major part of getting divorced. And I think that one of the reasons why we haven't gone into this is because this particular part of divorce can look so different for every single case. So maybe it's a little bit daunting to have this conversation, but we had a request this week to cover this topic. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's do this. So we're talking about how to prepare for trial, which obviously nobody wants their case to go to trial. Just even saying it sounds like dun, dun, dun. So let me start off by asking you this, Morgan. On average, like, what percentage of divorces even go to trial?
Well, so that's a really good question overall. I think I can talk about my cases, but I think that the confusion of not being able to answer a percentage is because divorce cases are really unique. It's not like you go to court and you're like, okay, judge, decide whether my neighbor truly did steal my car. Like, that's a black and white decision, right? That's one issue. Yeah. Divorces are so different because we have a bunch of issues that probably have to be dealt with in the middle of the case. We call them temporary issues. There's a lot of mini trials within a divorce case if you are in court, meaning, you know, the divorce judge has to potentially, if you can't agree, figure out child support, figure out a temporary parenting schedule, figuring out maintenance, whether to sell the house. There's all these issues that come up that might need to be dealt with before you get to the real trial. So I think we have to talk about it in mini trials or mini hearings, and then the overall trial, which is the last thing, if you can't agree, that truly will get you divorced. And I would say, in my cases, getting to the last trial where you're doing everything to get a divorce, I would say less than 5% actually go to that last trial fully.
So you just said mini trials.
Yep.
What is a mini trial a hearing, or is there a difference between a mini trial and a hearing?
No, I call them hearings, but I don't want our listeners confused depending on where you are, because a hearing, let's just put it out there, for temporary child support. Okay. Yeah. So you need temporary child support in your case because your case isn't moving fast. You need money. Okay. You've got to go to a temporary hearing on that, which is basically a mini trial. And why I say that is you're preparing, your lawyer's preparing. You need to have the facts. Sometimes you have to put on evidence. Sometimes it's just argument. So you have to be prepared to get to the end game, which is truly like a trial.
Okay. So just like for the sake of argument, there's no difference between a hearing and what you're referring to as a mini trial.
Correct. I just want people to understand, yeah, where we're going on that.
Okay. So the actual, so give me an example of an actual full-on trial.
Yes. Okay. So we have a case. Let's just pretend. We have Chad and Brenda.
Hypothetically.
Chad and Brenda.
They're back.
All right. Chad and Brenda have had a horrible divorce. They've been fighting the entire time. The judge has made rulings on temporary child support for Chad. The judge has made a ruling that the house should be sold. The judge has made a ruling that the kids are here certain days and with Brenda certain days. And they still cannot settle the total case. So the judge says, okay, setting trial dates, this case has to end. Setting the trial dates, let's just say in January. Well, we get to January. Now, every decision that the judge made is up for determination. And every outstanding thing that is still left, like let's just say that we don't know how to divide up the bank accounts that are left, or Chad went out and spent $100,000 on his girlfriend. These are all issues. Every issue comes into that final trial. Every issue is on the table in the final trial. Whereas the mini trials or the hearings, those are just like one-off two issues that are being dealt with in the middle of the divorce.
If a case is set for trial, so the judge says, enough, this is going to trial in January, how far in advance is the judge setting that date? Like this is in December, he says this, or this is in May?
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good question. That's a really good question. And I think it depends on exactly where you are. That's something you want to ask your lawyer. But for us, we have a lot of deadlines that are set based upon our rules. So for instance, most judges cannot set a real trial less than 60 days before the trial date and for various reasons. Most of our trial dates, though, are 4 months from now. Some are 8 months. Some are, you know, some jurisdictions set them a year and they say, hey, play around, try to figure this out. But in 1 year, this is your trial date. It's going. So you know that you have a backstop.
Okay. So you can't figure shit out. You've got more than one, or let's say that I'm just guessing here. Is it that in most cases there's one major, major hurdle and then lots of small hurdles, right? But there's this one major thing that mediation could not get to a resolve on. Nobody can agree. And that is why you're going to trial and that the judge sets it for at least 4 months in advance, blah, blah, blah. How often does, once that trial date is set, the couple is like, you know what? This is insane. The amount of money that we are going to spend on this shit getting litigated, we've got to figure this out. Or is it the kind of thing, and I don't know if this matters from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, where once there's a trial date set, the attorneys are like, no, it's going to trial. We're done.
Yeah, that's also an awesome question. Okay, so here's what usually happens. That's why I say probably less than 5% of my cases actually go to the trial. Why? Because people are stressed out. They don't want to spend any more money. Prepping for trial is unbelievably expensive. So usually what happens is this, at least in my cases, usually the judge will set trial dates, but also set a pretrial date. What a pretrial is in our jurisdiction is it's the judge usually taking the attorneys in their chambers. The parties are not generally present at the pretrial. And I always say at a pretrial, put a memo in writing. Why do I say that? Because we want the judge to read it. We want the judge to be prepared for the pretrial. Just like if you go into a hearing or a trial, you don't go blind, you prep. And then what happens in the pretrial is the judge says, okay, I see that there are six issues that are really the outstanding issues that are going to be set for trial. If the evidence was shown to me today, and these are the six issues, this is what I'm going to determine. This is how I'm going to call a ball and a strike. So the purpose of the pretrial is to leave the pretrial, talk to your client and say, hey, this is where the judge is leaning. Let's try to settle this. Sometimes, I would say the majority of times, we can work it out. that trial date is still looming over people's heads. And so a lot, and then if you cannot work it out at that pretrial, a lot of times you prep for the trial, there's still negotiations for settlement during the whole preparation of the trial. And then I would say most of the cases that can't settle do settle on the day or before trial.
Mm-hmm. They wait until the very last minute.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in that nasty of a divorce and you're prepping for trial and you can't get it done, there's still hope for you to get it settled on the day of trial, because that's when the pressure is the highest. Sometimes the judge will do another pretrial. Sometimes the judge will talk to the parties before they say, all right, start the trial. But by that point, you have spent a ton of money, a ton.
In your professional opinion and experience, how often is it people's personalities, personal issues, personality disorders, whatever it is the reason why people can't get this figured out versus the actual issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all plays into it, right? It's just, it's not one thing, but it's funny because most of my cases don't end up there because I'm talking to the client. I'm saying, listen, yes, I know you're right on this issue. Okay. Black and white, you are right. But at the end of the day, here's what you're going to spend fighting about it. And you could have been divorced and out-earned and earned that money back. And now we're just going to lose a ton of your money. So we talk about the risk reward, you know, but I've also had trials where we go to the actual trial. The judge sits with us for a full day on the day of the trial and says, listen, I know the issues in this case. Here's how I'm going to judge or, you know, come out on this matter. I'm going to rule this. And we have a party saying, no, not going to take it, judge. I want to put on my evidence. And that's their right. And that's the unfortunate part. You have to remember, you cannot settle the case by yourself. You can't. There's two parties that it takes to settle the case.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme mm-hmm. in this whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. It takes more than one person to get married. It takes more than one person to get out of this. And, you know, you're obviously not standing there arguing with yourself. So now let's switch and talk about a mentally and emotionally preparation. Mm-hmm. Because everything that we're, you know, teeing up is making this seem like this is a pretty major, daunting undertaking, right?
Yeah.
And it is. And I get it. The stakes are really high. So what does someone do to put themselves in the right frame of mind? And as I'm saying this, this is reminding me a lot of the episode that we recorded a while ago when we interviewed Joy Rosenthal about mediation and how you get your head straight before you enter into a situation like this, because it's not about I'm right and you're wrong and I'm going to fight you to the end. Because that is, to me, that's a mindset of you might as well just throw all of your money and sanity out the window. Mm-hmm. So how does someone get their mind in the right place for trial?
So I think the first thing to do, and this is kind of, you know, we're going to give to-dos today on three items that will help you get through a potential trial, but it kind of dovetails into one of my items, which is
okay. You
need to know what the risks and the rewards are, right? We always say this on our podcast, knowledge is power. It is so true. If you are knowledgeable of where this case can go, the good, bad, and the ugly, if you go to trial, you're mentally going to be much more stable going into that trial because you're going to know my absolute risk and my absolute upside. And you're going to know if it falls in between there, you're going to be okay. You know, that's the thing. The people who are the most stressed out and the most kind of out of their minds when they get to trial are the ones that don't have like a good roadmap and don't really know what they're doing or why they're doing it.
How common is it that people fire attorneys and get a new attorney before trial? Is that an area where a lot of people are, because the tensions are so high that people tend to want to jump ship at that point?
I've seen it happen. I will tell you that it's really difficult to get a new attorney right before trial, and a good one, I should say, a good one. Mm-hmm. Ones that you don't want may take your case right before trial and try it, but is that really the person that you want trying your case that hasn't been with you for, you know, a year or two going through this divorce and doesn't know every little thing, and then you're going to give them all these documents and say, go try my case? I mean, to me, that makes no sense. Now, if it's... And some judges won't let attorneys withdraw on your matter before a trial, really close to your trial. Now, if you're 3 months out and you don't like the way that things are going, things just don't feel right, certainly that's something that you can look into a new attorney. If you don't feel like the strategy and the roadmap is clear, yeah, that's not a problem to look into a new attorney. It's right when you get close to trial where you're going to have problems.
And I asked that question for a reason, and it's because we know that at this point in the game, your brain is fried, mm-hmm. and you are running off of emotion. You are exhausted, and it's normal to want to start placing the blame everywhere, right? Things are not going my way because of this, 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 and this. But is that the right time to say, you know what, then you're out of this and I'm going to go with someone new who's going to go in there and blow the pants off of my ex, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that is so challenging, and we talk about it all the time, but there's no blowing the pants off of anybody. And that is not the right mentality to get through this thing alive, right?
Right. I mean, I always say this to people too. It's like, you know, I have a trial. We do phenomenal, right? We're better than the other side. We're more together. We have a cohesive strategy. We are better in court, et cetera. And the judge makes a ruling. Guess what? You're not going to like every ruling. You're still going to feel like you lost, which is just insane, no matter how great of a job you do. Unless it's one issue and it's a win-lose issue and you win, if you go to an ultimate trial on all issues, you will lose some things and they won't feel good. It will not feel good.
I hate this. I hate, and I know that this is a commonly used phrase, but I don't like the term win. And I know that attorneys use it all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and because it's the easiest way to discern between yay or nay, right? But I hate it because I feel like it really frames you up for failure. Mm-hmm. I do not like win-lose. And I really wish that we could change that because you win what?
Right.
And you lose what? Like, enough already.
But what would you change it to? Because I'm happy to hear that.
Know. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a conversation that, like, I can't think of anything on the spot, but I just know how I feel when I hear that.
Yeah.
And when I hear, like, oh, I won this, but I lost this. Mm-hmm. It's everything in a divorce is about giving, right? You're giving stuff up because the ultimate win, and I'm using my air quotes, is that you get the next chapter of your life that can be so much healthier, whether you wanted this divorce or you didn't want this divorce, right? And I just feel like this stuff is so tough. And I mean, fighting is horrible. And I'm not talking behind the mic here as someone who hasn't fought and hasn't made mistakes. Obviously, I totally did. And there were things in my divorce that I quote unquote lost. And that's so dumb and annoying. Like, it's just, I don't know. And I just think that the hard thing about trial in general is that you're allowing somebody else to make decisions about your life and right. your kids' lives. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is sometimes what we talk about when we do strategies in my office, I'm like, okay, this is a positive outcome for you, right? So maybe that's one way we can talk about it.
Yeah.
This is a positive outcome. This is an outcome we do not want. And here's the percentage of how much I think this could happen. And so I give percentages at times so that people are not going in blind and they can make better decisions.
You know, in my culture, the Jewish people, we have a phrase, we say less than thrilled. Right? I'd be less than thrilled if this happened. And since we're smack dab in the middle of the Jewish high holidays right now and live time tomorrow, tonight is Kol Nidre, tomorrow is Yom Kippur. So let's be Jewish. I feel like it's, you know, if this happened, I'd be less than thrilled.
Got it.
I'd be thrilled if this happened. I'd be less than thrilled because I think that if it's something that you're losing, I would hate for people to look at it as, well, that's done. And then things are going to suck. No, because that's not life. In life, we adapt to everything.
Yeah.
Right? Let's say you really want to keep the house
and the judge rules, no, sorry, you're not keeping the house. This is what's going to happen. You guys have to sell the house. Does that mean that everything is over and everything is bad and horrible? No. It means that you're going to get yourself a gallon of ice cream. You're going to eat it. You're going to cry. You're going to vomit. And then you're going to deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, and again, I know I said a minute ago that, you know, we hate that a judge has to make decisions because you can't. And I also know that as I was saying that, there are so many people listening to this episode that saying, I know, but the other party will not play ball. I have no choice. And you are completely right, because it takes two people. So in terms of, let's go back to these steps. You know what the outcomes can be. You're setting yourself up for realistic expectations. Now, let's say that we're talking about someone who's in that frame of mind that I just described. Like, they tried. They tried in mediation. They really tried to negotiate and give things up. And they're at a stalemate with their opposing party is just like, no.
Right.
And now they're like, what the fuck?
What do I do?
How do they mentally prepare?
Okay, so I want to say a few things about this. Number one, a lot of times when you have someone like that on the other side, it's just a bunch of yapping. I think you posted something about the lion on our Instagram page. It's like that. It's like they're roaring. But let me tell you, when things get set for trial, when they get some not so positive recommendations at a pretrial, most of the people that I see will start caving. So that's why when you have someone who is that belligerent, will not deal, you want to start setting things in court. You do. I will tell you, the majority will cave, will start coming to the table, et cetera. Why? Because most people are not idiots. Most people know the value of a dollar. And when their attorney bills start coming in and it's high, they're going to put their tail between their legs and say, I dislike these bills more than I dislike you, and I need to get this thing settled. There are this few outliers that will go all the way to the end. I've had those too, but those are very small amount of, I would say, general population. So mm-hmm. My recommendation, if someone is not playing ball, Andrea, are you going to do this the whole episode?
I'm trying to swallow the coughs and it's not working. So either I'm going to just die in the middle of this or I have to cough and I can't catch the mute button in time. So okay. You know what, people?
We apologize for her coughing. Anyway. So anyway, my point is that if you have someone who's belligerent on the other side, start pushing it to court. Start getting those trial dates set. Start getting things going.
So how long do trials last and how long can they last?
Okay, so that's a great question. So most trials where there's only a few issues and you actually go to the full end date trial where you're going to get a divorce, maybe 4 or 5 days, depending on how long the judge is giving you on the day. Mini hearings or hearings usually are a few hours. And, you know, and then on the main trial, I mean, I've had trials though that we've been set for 4 or 5 days. And then we realize, and the judge realizes, like, there's no way this is getting done. And they've ballooned to 18 days. It's just, and that's something you want to talk to your lawyer about, because every day is money that you're paying your attorneys.
Talk to me about, see, now that you're talking about my cough, now I have to cough more. Okay. But now that you go through the trial, how long until stuff's actually wrapped up? So the judge makes the ruling. See, you're making me cough more. And it's this, 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 and this. How long until everyone signs on the dotted line and then you're divorced?
Okay. So if you go to a trial, no one's signing on a dotted line because the judge is making the ruling. So the judge issues a judgment. So for instance, most judges, if you go to a full trial, will conduct the trial. Let's just say it's 4 days of trial, right? I would say the majority of the judges then will request that the lawyers write written closing briefs, which will take a few weeks. And lawyers hate it. That's so annoying to write those because we essentially have to recreate the trial, put a ton of time and effort in, dragging in the law, and hand it to the judge. We know why the judge likes it. The judge likes it because if they agree with your position, they can just copy and paste your brief into their judgment. So the judge also wants to know the law. Both people are arguing different law. So it's helpful for the judge. That's why the judge likes to do it. But again, more money out of your pocket, having your lawyers work on it. So let's just say your trial ends after 4 days. Your attorneys have 3 weeks to draft your closing brief. Then they submit it on the third week. Then the judge, usually good judges, will have some kind of a judgment within 30 to 60 days thereafter. They will issue it. And that will be, you're divorced. Here's how everything is breaking out. Here's who, you know, had a positive outcome on these things. Here's who was less than thrilled on these things. And this is how it's going to go.
Wait, so there's no MSA?
It's a judgment that usually comes out. An MSA, marital settlement agreement, is a settlement agreement. So it's usually when you're agreed on things.
So
the judge, it will look similar to a marital settlement agreement or an MSA, but it will be in the form of a judgment coming from the judge. So,
do you still have a day in court?
Generally, the judge will potentially call you back to issue the ruling, and that may be the day in court, or sometimes the judge just issues the ruling and the judgment, and you're divorced on that day. Yeah, and but then again, guys, you got to talk to your lawyer about what your judge is like. I've also had judges that don't issue a judgment for 9 months. Yes. So you need to know what county you're in, what location you're in, what your judge looks like, and whether they're on top of their game. And that's another factor that you have to think about when you're thinking about going to trial or settling.
Okay, I have another question that counters something that I just said earlier.
Okay.
Let me serve this up. Let's say you don't want to go to trial, right?
Yep.
You listen to this episode and you're like, fuck that. I don't want to go to trial. But your attorney is telling you, it looks like you're going to go to trial. Now, we just said this is not the time to jump ship. But if your attorney is pushing for trial, right, and your gut is saying, I do not want to do this, would you advise at that point that someone pays another attorney that consultation fee that we spoke about in our How to Switch Attorneys episode and say, can you take an hour and look at this and tell me, give me another point of view on, is this really a trial case or not?
You know what? Yes, that is absolutely something that's an option for you. I just did that with a gentleman the other day. He had no intention of hiring me. In fact, his court case is in a week or so. He had recommendations from a judge that he didn't like, and the trial date is set. And so I looked through everything, looked through all his factors. We talked in detail, and I actually told him, I said, take the judge's recommendation and run. And here's why. This is my recommendation to you. So certainly can get another set of eyes on things if that's something you want to do. But make sure, obviously, make sure it's a good lawyer. Make sure it's a lawyer that just doesn't need the business because, you know, they may be inclined to try to sell you to come to them. And you just need someone to give you a very, objective opinion on the facts.
Okay, so let me put that in layman's terms. You have an attorney, fine, good attorney, right? You're saying find the very best attorney you can to pay that one-off fee to. Like, this is not where you're going to go and find someone whose ad you saw slapped on the side of a bus, you know, like an injury attorney, and say, take a look at this. What do you think I should do? You go find the best of the best and get those expert eyes on your case and say, this is what I'm looking at. If you were representing me, how would you lead me? And it will be well worth their hourly rate, which is likely going to be double what you're already paying, but it's going to be money well spent. Am I right?
You know what? I think you're totally right.
Okay.
And I know people don't like the price tag of the really big law firms and the high-end lawyers, but if you are feeling like you're treading water, and you're just freaking out because you've got this trial date and you just don't know what to do and you want another set of eyes on it, I agree with Andrea. Absolutely. It's worth the money spent.
On average, how long can you expect that to take? Like, let's say somebody reaches out to you, right? Like the guy that you just mentioned.
Yep.
What's the turnaround time on that? Like obviously, like he said, I'm set to go to trial.
Yeah. Well, so most good lawyers, if it's a new client coming in or wanting a consult or wanting to talk, they will move things around to get new clients in. So my turnaround is a few days, if I can't get them in sooner. But I will jump through hoops to make sure that I can accommodate those people.
And what does that look like? Somebody reaches out via email and says, I need you to take a look at this. And when does the billing start? How does that process? What does that process look like?
So there's a few ways that it can, there's a few ways it can go. So let's just say Chad reaches out, says, "Hey, I would like a second opinion, or I need to, you know, pick your brain. I have a trial date set. You know, I want to move forward." My process is I have my assistant call him, call Chad for more information. They know what to ask. They're going to get a detailed breakdown for me so that I'm not flying blind. Then they're going to talk to me and say, "Chad wants to come in. Here's the situation." I'm going to say, "No problem. Schedule Chad, but here are the documents that I want from Chad." And I may want a timeline from Chad, because remember, I want to make sure I'm giving the best advice possible. So coming in blind and not having anything to review is probably not the best idea. So you want to make sure that they have what they need to review before they talk to you. And then most lawyers at that point will know, all right, this is the amount of work that's going to go into talking to Chad, and they will quote a price. Sometimes it's just an hour worth of their time, a consult fee. Sometimes they're going to say, "Hey, wow, you just, I'm looking through, you know, 900 filings and a timeline that spans from 2008. Like, it's probably going to take me a good 4 hours. Do you want to pay that?" So you will know before you schedule the meeting what it's going to cost you and whether you want to go forward.
And now, a word from one of our sponsors. You've likely heard of the co-parenting app, Our Family Wizard, but why consider using it?
I'll tell you that not only do I recommend it for high conflict divorce cases, but over 1 million parents and family law practitioners have used it as well.
Our Family Wizard organizes your expenses, calendars, and helps you send more effective and productive messages.
Effective, meaning without the unnecessary snark. I'm looking at you, Andrea.
I'm looking at you, Andrea. Okay, yeah, I would have benefited from Our Family Wizard's tone meter. So guys, don't suck at divorce like I did and go check out Our Family Wizard.
Okay, so a good attorney, before you even get in the room, is obviously going to tell you, "Just so you know, this is what we're looking at," in order for me to review your case.
Absolutely. You're going to, at least it with me, you will know that before you even move forward or agree to set the meeting, this is what I'm going to charge to look at all this stuff.
But they're not paying for your assistant to call.
No.
And
nope.
Do that.
Nope.
Right. Okay. So like that very, very beginning discovery, you're free to do. And then after that, they're going to tell you, okay, if you want Morgan to take a look at this, it's going to cost you approximately $1,500-ish because of the amount of time.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Great. Okay. Amazing. I think that helps. So we've talked about, you've cursed my cough.
Somebody please get her some lozenges or something.
I have. I'm telling you, I'm puffy from steroids. I'm taking all this stuff. Ugh. I want my cough to go on trial. Let's recap on these steps because we're looking for the third. Let's go over the first two though, reminding everyone that first one is having a realistic expectation, right? You want to know what can happen, what would happen if we're less than thrilled, what would happen if we're thrilled, and how much is this whole thing likely to cost? Number two, wait, now I blanked on number two. What was the second?
Well, okay, so I'm going to put them in my words. The first one is know the risk and the reward, right?
Oh,
So know what you're going to say to your lawyer is, okay, I see that we have a trial date in 2 months. Let's talk about like what am I thrilled with? What's positive if we go to this trial? What am I less than thrilled with? What are we trying to avoid? So your risk and reward. So you can say to yourself, okay, this is worth going, or I got to give up a few more things because I want to get this settled. Number two, you're going to want to, if you have a trial coming up or a mini trial, prepare with your attorney for questions. So for instance, sometimes at these mini trials and most of the time at real trials, you're going to be on the witness stand. You're going to be asked questions. You might even have to give a deposition before you get to the trial. You want to work with your attorney to discuss what exactly is going to be expected of you, what questions may be asked of you, whether it's from your lawyer or the other, and how to answer those. No good lawyer will ever tell you to lie, but you don't want to be put on the spot and not know how to answer it. And so that's something that you have to work with your attorney about a lot before a trial. So that's number two, prepare with your attorney for questions that may be asked.
Okay.
All right. What's the third?
The third. Something we always harp on. Ask for a strategy or plan of the trial. So nobody, if you're not a lawyer, you're not going to know how a trial goes. You're not going to know who, what witness goes first, whose case in chief it is. If these things sound all foreign to you, that's because that's exactly why you're going to want to ask your attorney. What is the strategy or plan for the trial? So that when you get there, you know, oh, okay, my attorney is going to give an opening statement now. The first witness, it's my case in chief, and the first witness we're going to be calling is my ex. The next witness is this, and here's why we're doing it that way. And I can be expected to be called on the witness stand probably about on this day. So again, if you feel like you know the plan, you're going to be less stressed out when things are happening around you because you're going to know what's coming.
How do you help your clients not react in court? Like, I mean, I've got big facial expressions. And I know that it would be hard for me to sit there stone-faced the way that you're supposed to look if you're listening to opposing counsel say something that is making your head spin.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you coach people on not doing like, you know,
yeah,
the faces that Andrea would make?
Well, let me tell you, one of my recent trials, the opposing party kept making comments or like, or like whatever, or things like that. The judge almost threw him out of the courtroom. So you can really, if you can't get it together, you can really tank your case. So you need to know if you're inappropriate, the judge is going to pick up on it. They're reading everyone's face. So what I tell my client is like, look, if you hear something that is so wrong or makes you so upset, I always give them a legal pad and they're sitting next to me and I say, write it down. Write it down because one, we're going to have breaks and I'm going to be able to step out and talk to you about these questions. But two, it helps you kind of stay focused rather than making all these crazy faces. You're looking down and you're writing.
Can you write down anything you want? Like, can anyone see what you're writing down?
No one can see what you're writing down because it's between your attorney and you. You're sitting in between your attorney. I mean, obviously don't be drawing pictures of, you know, various body parts, but you know.
But like if you're really angry, can you write something like, you know, fuck these hoes?
Yes.
Honestly.
You can say that,
right? Like, if it keeps you from like making a face that can get you in trouble, can you write WTF?
Yes.
Can you write?
Yes. And then what I suggest you do, you write WTF to your lawyer, which may or may not be helpful to your lawyer. Because remember, your lawyer is focusing on what's going on in the trial. So you want to make notes to them that are relevant so that they can, you know, use it in the trial, et cetera. So if you write WTF 900 times and then show your lawyer, like, not super helpful to your lawyer. But regardless, if you're going to write WTF, scratch it out after. We don't want anyone strolling by your paper and seeing this.
Yeah, but like, what if it's not even for your lawyer? What if you're writing it literally just so that you can get your emotion out and no one sees it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what if you're writing it and it's not even for your attorney? You're writing something so that you don't make a face.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I had a client that just recently, I think she went through two full legal pads because she actually, her strategy was to write down everything that was said, you know, and you know how hard that is because people are talking a mile a minute, right? Like she was like a full-blown court reporter writing it on the pad of paper. And the reason she was doing that is because it kept her focus on the paper rather than like losing her mind at the trial when her ex said something that she did not agree with.
That would be me.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that would, especially if you are battling someone who's got some issues and possibly some personality issues. I can imagine that would make somebody crazy.
Yes.
To hear someone up there saying just really nasty, unkind things or twisting the truth or whatever it is, right?
Yep.
Okay. So are there do's and don'ts as far as what you wear? Like,
yeah,
I'm curious. Yeah.
So it's funny. Some people want to look poor. Some people want to look rich. Like this is in their own mind. It's so funny. My one client showed up and she said, I'm here. Look at me. I'm trying to look poor. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you don't look poor, but okay. And I laughed because I'm thinking to myself, well, you could have asked me, like, I'm not saying wear all your jewels here, but I would tell you what to wear. So I always say business casual is best. If you are a really wealthy person, yeah. Is it a good idea to bring your blinged out Rolex and your diamond earrings? Probably not. Probably not at all. Do you also want to look like a slob? Absolutely not. You want to just be put together and look like you're put together. Because if you look put together, you're going to be more credible. If you look like a slob and you rolled out of bed, you're going to look like you don't know what's going on.
Also, the numbers aren't fooling anybody. You can walk in there not looking like you have a ton.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about your yachts and the homes you have all over the world, maybe you don't want to wear the Rolex, but it's not like someone's going to be like, yeah, but look at her. Her dress looks like it came from TJ Maxx.
Yeah.
No. You know, like, it's not probably going to make that big of a difference.
Yeah.
Are there any other random funny things that you can think of that have happened in trials that you're like, oh, make sure you don't do this do this?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So I had one once where the opposing party was, it was a really long trial. So it was going a long, long time. And the opposing party just, I don't know if they got bored or what was going on. They just like takes out their phone like normal, like you're at like the dentist office. And it's just like scrolling on their phone, sitting at the table with their lawyer. And I will tell you, the judge lost his mind. Lost his mind. Yes, because he's like, one, are you texting somebody? Inappropriate in a court case. Two, you shouldn't have your phone whatsoever. And now you've got your phone out. And you know, for me, I said to the judge, I just hope that he's not recording something, because recording anything in a courtroom is an absolute no-no. So the judge just came down so hard on this guy. Because also, you know, if you think about it, we're in a very high decorum place, right? You have to have a lot of respect for the guy or the woman in the robe. And this guy is sitting there with his phone out, just scrolling like he could care less at his own trial. And that just drove the judge nuts.
And it goes without saying, in the age of social media, do not go live from your trial. Don't make Insta stories. Right. Don't take a selfie saying about to head into trial, thoughts and prayers. I know. I feel like we need to say that, because I think there are a lot of people out there who would think, well, it's harmless. Nothing started yet. I can't take a selfie, you know, before the judge walks out saying, guys, fingers crossed, things go my way. Just don't do that.
Yeah. Agreed. And the other thing is, don't forget what kind of power the judge has. So I've had a case where we had a mini trial. This was many years ago. We had a mini trial and the opposing party was just not honest, just never was, et cetera. And the opposing party thought that he could essentially just continue on being dishonest in front of the judge. Well, we caught him in a pretty big lie in the middle of the hearing. You know what the judge did? Called up the sheriff and put him in handcuffs and took him to jail.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you need to know your judge, because there's a lot of judges that are really tough like that. And there's a lot of judges that are really lax like that. So you need to know what kind of judge you're dealing with. And I'll tell you one thing, the minute that happened, the case took a very different turn, because the respect for the judge just went up even higher, saying, all right, this judge isn't going to mess around. Like, I cannot lie anymore.
Wait, what happens in that case? Like, I know that we don't really know, because it's case to case, but if you're actually caught lying.
Well, it has to be a big issue. Usually what it's called where I am is direct criminal contempt. So you're directly lying to a judge and you're caught. I mean, it was so blatant. I don't remember all of the good facts there. It wasn't something like, you know, I lie about what color my shoes are. It was like a big lie related to the underlying issue. And I remember this. So he said one thing, and it was related to kid stuff about why he picked up the kids. And I had called his father as a witness, and his father was in the hallway, so couldn't hear what he had testified to. And then his father came in and testified, no, he didn't pick up the kids. I picked up the kids because he called me and told me to pick up the kids. So he lied blatant, and his dad came in and ratted him out without him knowing. They didn't know what each other were going to say. So that was when the judge lost his mind and took him to jail.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be over like money. This was over a kid thing, mm-hmm. over picking up kids.
Yeah. Because you know, the judge is thinking, I think the judge did the right thing there. The judge is saying, like, when you're under oath testifying in my courtroom, you are here to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And you blatantly lied to my face. And then your dad came in and showed that you blatantly lied to my face. So therefore not only can I not trust you, you know, you essentially are in criminal contempt and you're going to jail. So he had to go to jail for the night, spend one night in jail. And I will tell you, jail by us is not a pleasant place.
Oy. Okay. So let's give everyone a recap here on these action steps. So just to kind of help everyone frame up their minds in the right way so that when they walk away from this episode and they're like, okay, if I need to go to trial, this is exactly what I need to know.
Yep. Yep. All right. Number one, know the risk and reward. So what are you going to be thrilled with? What are you going to be less than thrilled with? So you can make good decisions. This is related to mini trials or big trials. Number two, if you have a trial set, ask your attorney to prepare with you regarding questions. What can I be expected to be asked? What should I know to answer? How should I not answer? There's a whole preparation that goes into trial and or depositions. Number three, ask for a strategy or plan of the trial. Excuse Andrea. Ask for a strategy or plan of the trial. What does it look like for you? And if you know those three things and actually have those and actually follow them, you're going to feel so much better about trial.
And what we said earlier is if you are feeling like your attorney is not leading you in a direction that you're comfy with, we're not suggesting that you say, I'm firing you and I'm going to go hire someone else, but we are suggesting that you have every right to pay another attorney to take a second look at your case, just to help you have peace of mind and know, you know what? It's not just one person who's saying this. This person is saying this as well. This is the right thing right. to do. Now, I have one follow-up question to that. How do you broach the topic? Let's say you and I are working together, Morgan, and I get a second opinion. And the second opinion says, you know what? I mainly agree with Morgan on all these things. However, with this one thing, I would do this instead of this. Then how do I go to you and say, okay, so I had a conversation with so-and-so and they said that I should do this.
That's tricky, right? So what I would do is I would say, hey, to your a lawyer, you would say, hey, I know that we have this trial date coming up. I want to consider these options. And you would bring up what the other attorney said. And, or you would say, hey, but what about this? This is something like, let's talk about this because, my understanding is that this could be an option for me and I want to explore it. You could always say your neighbor told you, whatever. You don't have to disclose anything. It's your case. You want it done the right way. So ask for what you need.
And if you do say, I had a second opinion just to do my due diligence, blah, 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 is your attorney going to get annoyed with you?
No, I mean, maybe. They're just going to be like, going to be like, ugh, because they want to stay the course on their strategy. So for you, it's better just to say, hey, what about these options? You also don't want your attorney to get annoyed with you and fire you. You know, it's better just to come at them just saying, hey, what about this? Just question it. Can we do this? Is this an option for us? That kind of thing.
Do attorneys within the same firm ever team up and put their heads together? Like, so that it's not like, could you say, like, if I'm working with you, right? And I'm having some issues with some stuff, would I ever say to you, could I ever say to you, like, hey, Morgan, is this something that maybe we could like talk to a few other people about as well, just to make sure? Because you're great. I just don't know because I don't know this stuff. And this is my life on the lines. This is my kids on the line. I want to make sure that this is the right thing. How do you suggest that?
Well, I think it all depends on the law firm, but I think that doing as a client asking for that should be taken well. So for instance, at our firm, we do that all the time. So I have clients that will be with a partner of mine and say, hey, I read Morgan's bio. I want to bring her in just to get either a female's perspective or a different perspective, or there's something on her bio that I liked. There's probably not one partner in my big firm that would say no. They gladly would welcome that. I also do the same. So for me, if I'm not a great fit for the client, or we're not seeing eye to eye, and they say, hey, your partner, John, could I talk to John? I'm like, absolutely. Let's build the team around you that works for you in your case.
Yeah. And even if we do like each other, would it be okay to say, like, we're getting along, but can we also bring Catherine into this just to get another eye on this one particular issue before we go to trial?
Yeah. And, you know, we even do it too for trials. So, for instance, if the judge is someone that, you know, John Doe in my firm gets along with better than I do, I would tell the client, like, hey, you know, John Doe down the hall from me is really close and thinks this judge is great and has tried a bunch of cases in front of this judge. Do you want to bring John Doe in? So that's something that in a big firm, that's a positive that lawyers have to offer that smaller firms may not.
And you just made me think of something else. We talk about this a lot, how important it is that your attorney has a good relationship with opposing counsel. Now, in a trial setting, how important is that? Since you're not really talking attorney to attorney, this is really more attorney to judge. Would you agree with that? That in this case, it would be more about how the attorney's relationship with the judge is versus, let's say you were the petitioner, right? So you didn't, when you hired your attorney, you had no way of knowing who your ex was going to hire. And let's say that your attorney gets along fine with the other attorney, not amazingly, but fine. Would you want to bring in someone else who might have a better relationship with opposing counsel? Or at this point, is it really about the judge?
I always think that bringing in somebody or having a good relationship, no matter how down and dirty you are with the trial, opposing counsel is having good relationships will be the way that you get it done and save yourself a ton of money. You can disagree all you want, but if they're respectful with one another, that's how you get it done, even with the judge making, you know, calling balls and strikes on your case. So I think that absolutely you want to have people that get along. So if you're watching your lawyer and you're like, oh my gosh, Morgan and Andrea do not get along. The way Morgan talks about Andrea, she just absolutely dislikes Andrea. That's something you may want to say, hey, can we bring in someone else who gets along better with Andrea? And it's never too late if it's in the same firm to bring in somebody else because, you know, you have Morgan around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, you know, we went in a lot of different directions in this episode. And I think that's because a trial can go in so many different directions. But we wanted to bring you this episode to help you see the different things that you can do, that you can have control over, because trials are so challenging because you don't have a ton of control, right? That's the whole thing, is that somebody else is going to make these decisions for you, but you do have control over how you prep for this. So you know the risks and rewards. You have that conversation with your attorney of, okay, I'd be thrilled if this happened. We'd be less than thrilled if this happened. And we know that this can happen. And here's the percentage of this and this and this. You listen to what the judge says at the pretrial. Yes. Pay attention, because the judge is going to tell you, okay, friends, if this is going to go to trial, I'm likely going to lean this way. I'm likely going to lean that way. That is like your last chance. The judge is basically throwing you a Hail Mary at that point, saying, if you kids want to stop this, here's how you stop it. You know, settle this or we wait 4 months. Now, if you still have to go to trial because opposing will not play ball or the stakes are that high that you have to trial this thing out, then do all of the work. And if that means getting another set of eyes to look at this, get another set of eyes. And then lastly, when you are sitting there in trial, do not make TikToks. Do not scroll on TikTok. And don't make faces like you're Andrea making reels or doing whatever I do in my daily life. Write stuff down. Even if it's not necessarily for your attorney to see, just look down and write. Don't make a face. And whatever you do, don't lie or you're spending a night in Cook County.
Nobody wants to spend a night in Cook County unless it's in your own bed.
Girl. Wow. We gave a lot of information out. I thought this was going to be an easy episode and I was
wrong. It takes a lot of right turns and sometimes left. So if you are listening and you're like, okay, that was a lot, but there's a few nuggets here that I want more information on, just let us know. We are happy to break down trial episodes into smaller bite-sized episodes as well, because we know trials are really stressful and we want to make sure that you have all the information going into it to make good decisions and also know what's going to come.
That's right. And again, take this all day by day. You can't listen to this episode and jump ahead 75 chapters in your story. If you are not at the point yet where you think you're going, where you even know whether or not you're going to trial, don't have the mindset of I'm going to trial. Slow down. Slow down. This is a process. Divorce does not happen in a moment. It's not a light switch. You got to take everything as it comes. Take breaths. Go meditate. Go for a walk. Go talk to a friend. Take a beat. Everything is going to be okay. You got to also lower the stakes in your mind, as hard as that is to do. Nobody is standing there with a gun pointing to the back of your head. Calm down. You are going to be okay. And that's one of the reasons why we do this show, is to remind you that you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And don't forget, you know, people think that this is it. You know, this is it. But there's a life out there that you probably can't envision right now that will be there for you post-divorce. And sometimes getting to that divorce where you can start your new life is the best thing for you, and maybe for your children too, if they are, if you have children in the case.
Even if you get rulings that you're less than thrilled about, it's going to be okay. So with that, friends, please go and join our private community. If you find yourself needing some more support, there are links to that direct in our show notes. Go find us on Instagram, find us on Facebook, find us wherever you go. We are here to support you in every single way that we can. If you have questions, send us a message. We respond to every single DM that we get.
That's right. And if you like our show, please rate us and review us. It means the world to us. It's just a simple click. And if you want to leave us a review, it's always anonymous. So feel free to do that. We would appreciate it.
That's true, friends. Keep swimming. You can do this. You have got this, and we've got you. For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.